Now, Jennifer, you're not going to cry here this morning hearing this, are you?
Every patriotic song makes me cry.
Well, it's pretty patriotic watching our last baby walk the graduation field at Horizon High School. Carol is done.
She is.
Wraps up 4 years at Horizon High School, graduates, and we're going to be empty nesters here shortly, folks. Thank you for tuning in to your weekend wake-up call and joining the conversation right here in the living room of Rosie on the House. You can eavesdrop in on us by simply tuning in. You can also join the conversation. We'd love to visit with you. We throw the doors wide open and throw the telephones wide open at a toll-free number, 1-888-767-4348, toll-free number from wherever you are in Arizona this Memorial Day weekend.
I have to apologize. I had my headphones off, and I assumed you were coming in with a patriotic song. So, well, yes.
It's patriotic getting them graduated.
It is. It is. It's awesome. You know, it is really important, I think, thinking back on what Carol has come away with from being in high school. What do you think the most important subject she came out of there with?
Probably life.
Life.
Probably the 4 years she spent on Palm and Cheerline.
Discipline.
Managing
team spirit,
people, leadership. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I just thinking, I ran across this article this week, and I just thought it was kind of timely with Memorial Day. It's from the Imprimis, we decided, I think, Hillsdale College newsletter, and it's about the importance of teaching history in school.
Oh, and if, you know, if all I had to take in high school was history, I'd have been a Rhodes Scholar.
You would have been.
They had other classes like biology that kind of messed me up.
Well, it just kind of made me check ourselves, you know, do we need to spend more time with Carol, probably, and just in discussion as a family in general about history. Wilfred McClay wrote this article for the newsletter, and it talks about the purpose of teaching history. And I think sometimes in our school system, we've kind of broken down in teaching history because we've kind of come up with this thought that, well, maybe if you teach history, it's propaganda. You're trying to, you know, brainwash your kids into thinking what America is or is not. But he writes that teaching solid history, is a rite of civic membership. And it introduces our young people to the political and cultural inheritance that they have. And it's a way to be made aware of all that we have, our privileges and our burdens. So it's just really important. And when you instill these kind of things into our children, you come away with kids that are willing to participate. They want to be aware. They want to participate in the election. They want to work in the government. They want to make a difference. And then they'll be willing to sacrifice for the greater good. I think we kind of lost sight of that a little bit. So I just want to kind of backtrack with Carol and make sure that before she heads out that she understands how important it is.
Well, you've only got her for a few more months.
Might get her from a lifetime, really.
Yeah, that's
true. They kind of come back to you. You know, after they graduate high school, you become smarter and smarter.
You know,
as they get older.
Yeah, that's true. The parents do become smarter and smarter. But in six kids, we haven't had one boomerang back in yet.
That's pretty good. So does that mean empty nest pretty soon?
It'll be empty nest pretty soon for the Romeros. Here talking Memorial Day, here talking history. And to do that, we've brought in one of our most frequent and admired guests that always feeds us lots of response the following week, how much the listeners enjoy you coming. Dr. David Dean from Grand Canyon University, history professor. Thank you, professor of history. History professor?
Same thing. Good morning. Thanks for having me today.
Hey, thanks for coming in. And we brought you in specifically to spend a little bit of time this morning to talk about Memorial Day on this Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah, and it's a really good time to reflect on some of the things that you were talking about. You know, everything we believe about the present comes from what we believe about the past. And so understanding a little bit more about our Memorial Day will help us, I think, be a little bit better civic-minded, a little bit more committed to our country and at a time when probably we need it the most.
More than a day for a barbecue?
More than a day for just barbecues.
Well, let's get to the story behind the instigation of the Memorial Day celebration.
Well, Memorial Day, actually some of the earliest incidences of commemoration of Memorial Day, it occurs around the Civil War, is when we have our first Decoration Day, and that's really what it was called. Many people soon after the war would go out to the graves of soldiers and see them unkempt, see the that sacrifice that was made not being kind of cared for, and so putting flowers down and that kind of stuff started to be kind of a tradition, a thing to do. May traditionally was the month that we did that because that's when all our flowers are in bloom and whatnot. So we get our earliest commemorations in 1865 to 1868 around the Civil War that start that.
Where would it have started? I mean, can they pin it to a particular location?
There are several places that claim the origin of it. South Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina, actually former slaves used to, in 1865, came out to graves and of Union soldiers and cleaned the graves up and put flowers down and then had a parade and heard speeches and talked about the freedoms and things that they won for them. So some people will attribute that. Officially, the government attributed it to New York in 1868. And in Arlington National Cemetery, they had the first official ceremony in 1868 at Arlington National Cemetery.
That is a tear-jerking, generating location. That's as solemn a place as you would ever want to be.
Well, the observance there at Arlington National Cemetery is there on the site of the Lee Custis House, which was at that time, it was for the commemoration, it was draped in black banners and things, and people gathered. About 5,000 people gathered there in 1868 to hear several speeches and to kind of mark the soldiers' graves and things that were planted there around the property. When the Union took over that from the Lee family, they turned it into a cemetery and made it that hallowed ground.
Yeah, the home of Robert E. Lee, commanding general of the Confederate forces, actually left his home there on the shores of the Potomac across from Washington, D.C., to head up the Confederate Army in the war between the states.
Yeah, he actually was offered a commission in the Union Army,
yes,
but said, I'm a Virginian first, and so he joined the Confederacy and wasn't the Supreme Commander until 1862 or so after several unfortunate incidences to their commander, Joe Johnston.
You shared with me some quotes from President Garfield. Do you have those on your fingertips? Those were particularly awesome quotes.
Yeah, in the speech that future President Garfield gave that day on March 30th, a speech called "What So Proudly We Hail," he gave a couple of kind of marked the occasion by the significance of these men that made the sacrifice. And one of the quotes is, "If silence is ever golden, it must be here beside the graves of 15,000 men whose lives were more significant than speech, and whose death was more poem, the music of which can never be sung." And he was kind of talking about that experience, that what can we really say that matches the sacrifice of those that gave their full measure for our country.
I have a library that includes...
You have a library.
A collection of presidential biographies. And Garfield is probably one of the later ones I read. Just read it within the last year. And he's one of those kind of forgotten presidents. But when you read his biography, he, in my mind, is probably one of the finest men, just all-rounded man, family man, civic leader, servant, civil servant, that ever got into the White House.
So it was a congressman, Civil War veteran. I mean, very well-rounded and prepared for the presidency.
And was he also the one that went on to say, "I love to believe that no heroic sacrifice"? That was his quote as well, wasn't it?
Right. "I love to believe that no heroic sacrifice is ever lost, that the characters of men were molded and inspired by what their fathers have done, that treasured up in American souls are all the unconscious influences of the great deeds. Each for himself gathered up the cherished purposes of life, its aims and ambitions, its dearest affections, and flung all, with life itself, into the scale of battle."
And, you know, you almost have to have a little bit of history, or you have to be just a soldier at heart. You know, for years, throughout the ages, countries would hire soldiers. But those aren't really the soldiers we're here to memorialize this particular weekend.
Right. America's citizen soldier goes back to our earliest founding, and the Memorial Day starts as a result of Civil War, where we lost 620,000 Americans died in that war. And to give that just a comparison, we had about 640,000 Americans lost their lives in all other wars. And to give just a perspective of the percentage per capita of loss of life in the Civil War, if you took the same number of percentage per capita in the Vietnam War, where we lost 58,000 Americans, you would have the same per capita, would be 4 million names on the wall in Washington, D.C.
Mm. So when, as a history professor, are you going to predict mankind will evolve beyond the need for war?
I'm not sure man will ever evolve beyond the experience of war. We're already beyond the need for war.
We are.
But will we ever evolve beyond the experience of it?
It's interesting. I was reading not too long ago about the number of national countries there are on the globe as compared to just 50 years ago. The number of countries it's like tripled.
I
know I'm off track here. I'm on one of Rosie's bunny trails. But it seems like the more we segregate into our own little private holes, the more inclined we may be to feel we have to defend something.
Well, I think an alternative way of thinking about that is that when you're under large colonial imperial ruling powers, you have fewer countries, right?
Yeah.
But as they form their own identities and work towards their independence from those colonial powers, you get the rise of many smaller countries because that shows that diversity. You can't have that one-size-fits-all government kind of thing or world kind of thing.
Here talking Memorial Day on this Memorial Day weekend with Dr. David Dean from Grand Canyon University. More when we get back. If you'd like to join the conversation, you're welcome to at 1-888-767-4348.